This is Bill Ratner, the voice of Flint on G.I. Joe. I'm stuck on nerdswithattitudepodcast.com. Get me out of here, yo, Joe!
All right, what is up, nerds? Welcome to the latest episode of the Nerds with Attitude podcast.
I've never heard of it.
Christmas edition. It's not. We're just recording on December 1st. As always, I am Kevin, and I am joined by the indomitable
Scott. Indomitable. I was waiting for the second part of that.
Abominable.
I'm the abominable Scott.
Yes. So what's up? We're talking stuff.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Classic intro.
I don't know what we're talking, but we're talking it.
I think right up top, we're going to talk about Disney Plus.
I love it. I've subscribed, and where are we?
We are in a parking lot that we are trying to get out of. As usual, we are on the road talking while driving.
Yes.
Don't worry, we're hands-free. Both hands are on the microphone. from the steering wheel. All right. That cleared out the other six people that were listening. So
yep.
Now it's just you and me. All right. So Disney Plus,
it
has dropped. And let's just talk about The Mandalorian. Let's hit the big boy right up front.
All right. How spoilerish are we going to get?
It's been out long enough. By the time people hear this,
that awesome.
They should have been caught up to the first four episodes.
Yes.
And where to begin? You start.
Me go? I can't believe how good this is. And not only can I not believe how good this is, but it seems with every episode it's getting better. And I don't know how that's...
Yeah.
I don't see how they can maintain this kind of momentum going forward. But with every episode, I've watched every one of them three or four times at least.
I've only watched each episode once.
Yeah.
Because I got other stuff I'm trying to watch also.
I
agree. It feels incredibly like what you want Star Wars to feel like.
Yeah.
The world feels good. The costumes feel good. It's a good mix of props, costumes, puppets and CGI.
Yeah. It's there's sound effects, the actual use of practical effects.
Yeah.
With the miniature ships and the little miniature sets that they then they bump up the quality with CGI. They use the CGI to enhance those effects, and
you should do it
exactly. And it looks fantastic. And like you said, it feels like Star Wars.
Yeah, and so far the story's really engaging. The Mandalorian is the hero, and he truly is. He's a bounty hunter. We meet him picking up bounties from Apollo Creed.
Right.
And, tracking people down, trade him in for some money, and he uses the money to upgrade his armor, which I think that's kind of a cool ongoing thing.
It is.
Seeing him improve his suit.
It's like a Build-A-Figure with every single Carbonite character he collects, he gets a piece of his armor.
You know what's funny is the figure that they put out for him by the end of the first episode was already out of date.
Yes, it was.
Was already inaccurate.
And then by the end of the third episode, it was severely out of date.
Baby Yoda. Everyone loves Baby Yoda.
We were just having sandwiches at a sandwich shop, and the girl behind the counter saw my Mandalorian shirt that I'm wearing and started freaking out about how badly she wants a Baby Yoda.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants Baby Yoda. I want a Baby Yoda.
And going back to practical, it's puppet. It's an animatronic, and then they heighten it with some CG to make it look a little more real where it needs to.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, where you look at CG Yoda from episode 1, 2, and 3,
ugh.
But nothing ever beats puppet Yoda.
Right.
So they've just sort of improved on the mechanics of puppet Yoda to make baby Yoda. And yes, look. We know it's not Yoda.
I was going to say that same thing, but without knowing only George Lucas knows the name of the species, so...
I have a sneaking suspicion that Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau may have either gotten that information out of George or have just going to name it themselves.
Probably,
And make something canon about what Yoda is.
Well, Dave Filoni's kind of like George's adopted child.
Yep.
I mean, he knows everything that's in George's head. So it wouldn't surprise me.
He's like the ultimate fanboy, but he's capable.
Yeah.
You know?
And he's got the inside track and the knowledge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unreal.
Because there's a lot of fanboys out there wearing their Stetsons or fedoras that could not pull off this world.
Yes.
And Dave Filoni is that fanboy.
He is. And
I'd say he's king fanboy.
He really is.
And,
yeah.
And it shows in the quality of what he's putting out.
Yep.
Starting with Rebels.
Yeah.
Which I still...
Well, starting with Clone Wars. Because, I mean, yes, the right. Clone Wars, there's a lot of filler in there, but there's some really good quality content in there. But
I
then
agree.
Moving on to... I mean, but that pales in comparison to what Rebels became. So...
Rebels is still, like, my favorite piece of Star Wars material of everything that's been made.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. That's pretty cool. Mine...
It's... We're off track of The Mandalorian, but about Rebels real fast... It's the hub of the Star Wars world, of how it brings in prequel stuff and sets up original trilogy stuff, and even has a few little things in there that are being picked up and used in the new trilogy.
Yeah.
You know, and it's very mature, and it's told very well with a lot of heart and a lot of importance to what goes on.
Yeah.
Which I've talked about at length. But anyway, The Mandalorian...
Will we ever see the man without his helmet on? What do you think?
I don't think so. I think
I love that.
In today's modern cinema world, you can have a character where you never see his face, and the actor can be just fine without ever showing his face. This is not a Judge Dredd situation where the character never takes off his helmet, but in the movie, within 5 minutes, he takes it off and never puts it on again.
Right.
That's not the way. I think, you know, Boba Fett, you never saw what Boba Fett looked like, and I think they're taking that same homage or that same principle
right.
and applying it to The Mandalorian. Does he have a name? I apologize, I don't...
He doesn't. No, there has...
He's just being called just The Mandalorian.
The Mandalorian, yeah. And which is fine. I am totally okay with that. I'm fine not seeing his face. I think it's awesome. I think the moment we saw Boba Fett's face, it kind of lessened the mystery behind the character. And I like that sense of mystery. I like the sense of not knowing, not being able to see his facial features. It kind of heightens the suspense of, ooh, what's he going to do? How's he going to react here?
Right.
Is he going to shoot, or is he going to, you know, is he going to shake somebody's hand?
And I got to give him credit for, like, camera angles and music cues and very subtle body language. A lot of information and emotion is being transmitted through a person who you can't see his face.
Right.
And you really are very clear through just certain head nods or static, you know, stares.
Or a groan.
Right. What's going on?
Right. And up until, I want to say, probably episode 4 was the episode that really you started seeing more of a lighthearted personality behind him. He started opening up a little bit. He probably had 3 times the amount of dialogue that he had.
He was pretty much by himself for the first 3 episodes. And by episode 4, now he's interacting with a lot of other people.
So let's break it down by episode. So episode 1, he teamed up with IG-11.
Who I would love to see return. I thought the way they made IG-11 move and shoot and, you know, the physicality of that robot, I was in love with.
Oh, yeah. The way he would just walk over the bodies on the ground with the twist of his
and
waist.
Yeah, the way he
his...
was, you know, arms up, shooting super fast and very robotic, very precise.
Absolutely. It was really cool.
I would like to see a little personality added to it and have it be brought back.
Yeah.
One episode.
Yeah. So far. I mean, he is a robot, and R2-D2, C-3PO, Chopper, they were all blown to shit at least several times during their run, so it's possible that he could return.
Yeah, and initiate self-destruct.
Oh, God, that gag was awesome. And you could just see the Mandalorian, his shoulders drop, and you could see that with the tilt of his head, he's like, bitch, please, come on now.
Like, no, don't self-destruct.
Right.
So then episode 2.
Episode 2, he had his buddy Krill or whatever his name was. You know, I have spoken. He was back.
Nick Nolte.
But you had
is
the
he
interaction.
An Ugnaught? What is he?
He is an Ugnaught.
He looks tall for an Ugnaught.
That's true. He does. I don't know.
All right.
But he is an Ugnaught. But we had the interaction with the Jawas in this episode.
Yep.
And you got to see the interior of the Sandcrawler. You got to see the bridge of the Sandcrawler.
Can I tell you...
Oh, my God.
My wife hates Jawas.
Okay.
She hates them. She thinks they're like rats to her. They're creepy and annoying, and she hates them. So when he starts literally disintegrating them, she was jumping off the couch super happy. Like, it was so much joy.
That's
and,
awesome.
Yeah, the disintegrations from his rifle.
That is badass.
And that's a subtle nod to Empire, where, you know, Vader looks directly at Boba and says, no disintegrations.
Yeah.
And now we see why. Like, there's nothing left if you blow them up.
Yeah. And that rifle that he's using is the rifle that Boba Fett used in the holiday special.
Okay.
So that's a little nod to that.
Yeah, a lot of real subtle Easter eggs or nods to original trilogy.
Oh,
Or just the canon in general.
So then in episode 3, the Sin, that's the episode where he goes in and takes out...
He delivers Baby Yoda. Yeah,
delivers Baby Yoda.
Finds
his reward.
Yep, gets his reward, makes new armor out of it.
And then, yeah, all of a sudden, he has a turn. And he doesn't know...
Crisis, was it a crisis of faith?
Crisis of conscious?
Crisis of conscious.
Yeah.
Conscious of something or other. Yeah, and realizes, like, you know, the Empire shouldn't have this innocent child
right.
to do with...
This 50-year-old innocent child.
Yeah, he's still 50 years old. He ages slowly, but he's still an infant.
Yeah.
So...
And but just the way he goes about attacking, brutally attacking the Imperials. And you could see why in the first episode, whenever they said, we've got you 4-1, he says, I like those odds. You can see why it is that he is such a badass fighter. So, yeah, he goes and he has this crisis of conscience. Ooh, traffic. But he comes out the better for it with the baby. And just when you think... all is lost, and he's about to get his ass handed to him, but you know he won't because it's only the third episode.
Right.
In come his tribe of Mandalorians to save the day.
Mandalorian brothers in arms.
Yeah.
Arms.
And that scene, just, you know, with all of them flying around.
Yep.
It just blew me away.
Yeah, because once he betrayed the Empire and stole Yoda back, that basically reopened the contract, and there's a scene with... Apollo Creed, that every bounty hunter in the system has one of those trackers.
The tracking fobs,
Yoda,
yeah.
Which is kind of a setup that I had forgotten about, because when you get to episode 4...
Oh, yeah. Whenever you get to episode 4, he is on this backwater planet trying to just hide.
Yeah, lay low for a while.
Yeah.
Figure out his shit, hide where no one's going to find him, but...
All of a sudden, there you've got a... Well, the bounty hunter doesn't even show up until the very end of the episode.
Right. But there's a bounty hunter that has tracked Yoda there.
And he makes a couple of mentions that they've been on this planet during the course of the episode for several weeks.
Right.
Because at the end, after everything has gone down, he says, well, we've been... You know, it's been clear for a couple of weeks. It's time to move on. And he was going to leave the baby there with the people on this planet. And then all of a sudden, a bounty hunter comes out shooting... And
realize again. So, episode 1 through 3 felt to me like a series.
Okay.
Of a long continuing story. Episode 4 to me felt like the first that was just a standalone, a bottle episode, they call it, you know, and it felt extremely formulaic of something I've seen so many times. I keep calling it the A-Team episode, where the gun for hire rolls into the village who's being. They're being overrun by the local warlord.
Right.
So he teaches the villagers to defend themselves, to defeat the local warlord.
Right.
Takes his small pay and moves on. You know, thank you, Dusty Traveler. You know, thank you, Gunman, you know, Gunslinger.
And yet it is done so very well.
It was done well, but it was a plot that I've seen a lot.
Okay.
Was my only complaint. And that didn't even make me not like it.
Right.
It was just something I've seen this a lot.
Right.
But it was cool to see that, you know, the dog faced marauders, and they had a
like Barat. It was based off the alien Barata from Jabba's palace.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they had a repurposed AT-ST,
which was awesome.
Which and glowed. I don't know if it's Filoni or Favreau, but somebody likes glowing red eyes, because the Jawas had red eyes.
Yeah.
The AT-ST had glowing red, you know, windows which looked like glowing red eyes.
Yeah. I know you that they're selling that AT-ST at Best Buy right now. It's a Best Buy exclusive, but there's no glowing red eyes. So,
I throw some little red Christmas lights in there.
Sounds
and turn
good
them
to
on,
me.
And you're good to go.
Yeah.
TV screen accurate.
So,
what do you think? Do you have any guesses for where this show? Oh, we forgot about Cara Dune.
Yeah,
was the other new character introduced
in episode 4? And what a badass! I'm just the battle between the two of them. Whenever he's tracking her at the very beginning, mm-hmm. and the fight that they have, just seeing how well choreographed it was, and how she stood her own, and in some ways was just beating his ass.
Well, because she was, what did you say, she was a rebel?
She was a rebel shock trooper,
yeah,
according to him. And she spoke about the Battle of Endor and after the Battle of Endor, how they would just drop her and her fellow troopers into different locations to mop up Imperial warlords, mm-hmm. and whatnot. So you've already got this. You see this battle and you think, well, holy shit, who is this person? Then you find out that she is like the creme de la creme of rebel soldiers.
Yeah, now she's just a displaced soldier of fortune.
Yeah.
Doing her, she was already there hiding out on that planet, just laying low and doing her thing.
And I liked the little Rebel Alliance tattoo on her cheek.
They covered up her mole with a Rebel Alliance logo.
She have a mole there?
That's her thing. She has a little mole on her cheek.
Oh, does she
right
really?
There. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't even know who she was.
Gina Carano?
Yeah, Gina Carano. Yeah.
Who's really cute in this? I gotta admit, she was in the first Deadpool as I don't know, one of the strong men for the bad guys, and she fights Colossus at the end of the movie. And there she's just kind of this.
I have a vague memory of
big,
that.
Like muscular, like big, plain woman.
Right.
Didn't really think much of her. And in this way, she was very charismatic, pretty decent actor.
Yeah.
And you know, yeah.
So. I like that they focused a lot on her strategic planning and the way that she just kind of reaches and how much the Mandalorian trusted in her once they got to know each other and work with each other, that he's willing to throw over his, you know, massive disintegration rifle and let her just kind of take the lead with it. That was really cool.
Yeah. And they set her up that she'll definitely be back, if not this season, in a future season.
Yeah. You know? Well, they've already got her action figure, so
yeah,
she's got to be back.
They also made an action figure of IG-11, and he died in the first episode.
Right.
So I don't know what to believe anymore.
I don't either.
You know, it's funny, they made a comment about the AT-ST, and they're like, oh, you don't fight those, you won't survive. And I'm like, bitch, teddy bears defeated one of those things.
Right. They had massive trees, though, that they could squish them with.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, it was, that was
do you
cool
have
though.
Any predictions? Can you even theorize where this series might be going?
You know, I can't. I don't know if they're going to pull off this whole lone wolf and cub thing that they've got going on for the entire run of just this season, or if that can carry on to the next season, because they're already filming season 2 right now.
Oh,
it's in production already.
Yeah. That's without a doubt.
So
I hope you get more episodes in season 2.
That'd be great.
Because they did that with Rebels, where I think the first season of Rebels was only like 12 episodes.
Right.
But every season after that got a full order of like 22 or something like that. So I'm hoping the Mandalorian does the same thing.
I wouldn't complain.
And you get maybe 12.
Yeah.
You know, next season.
I will say that I was, whenever I first saw the runtime and knowing that there's slightly over a half an hour, I was a little bit disappointed. I really wanted, you know, a full hour-long episode each time.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they fit so much material in it. Doesn't feel forced. Doesn't feel rushed. And the time flows. And
you know, at the end of the day, you're getting a four-hour-long story of The Mandalorian, which is, you know,
I'm eating it up.
It's a double feature.
Yeah.
That's part 1, part 2 movies.
I love it.
The only thing I can predict, which has kind of been, which I predicted from the first episode when he made the pauldron out of the silver steel.
Right.
Is that
Beskar.
Predict that by the end of the season or through the course of the show, he will eventually remake all his armor and be like a literal knight in shining armor.
That'd be pretty cool.
You know, going around doing the Mandalorian stuff.
Yeah, because I think right now all he's got is the chest plate, the arm.
Both shoulders,
both
chest,
shoulders,
and one thigh.
And the wrist gauntlet.
The wrist,
too.
Wrist guards, too, yeah.
And he's got one thigh?
One thigh.
Okay.
Yeah, he still has one beat-up brown thigh and then his boots. So.
Just think of all the different action figure options you can have.
Yeah.
Build your own Mandalorian.
I don't know.
There you go.
I'm waiting for the shiny chrome-plated.
Oh, that's going to be so cool.
The vacuum chrome.
That'd be amazing. Yeah.
It's not that. It's just shiny steel. But anyways, Moving on, what else are you watching on Disney Plus?
I started watching the Imagineering story, which
that's Disneyland or something. Or
it's about making Disneyland and the follow-up parks across the world. And I was completely unaware that France has two Disneylands.
Really?
Japan has two Disneylands. There's a Disneyland in Hong Kong, a Disneyland in Shanghai, both in China. There's, I mean, they're fucking everywhere, man.
And was not aware of that.
One of them in Japan.
Why
they had
so many goddamn people got to come to the one in Anaheim?
I don't know, right? But the one in Japan, the second one, they call it Disneyland C. And it's not like Disneyland letter C. It's C, S-E-A.
Yeah.
They actually built the kind of like the island that it's on. It was just in the ocean. They had no land for it. So they're like
Water World.
We will build you.
Of Disneyland?
Pretty much. We will build you this land. And they built an island.
Weird. That's some rich Saudi Arabia stuff right there.
Right. That's probably next, Disney Saudi. But it's not only that, but it's the first episode follows Walt Disney from being the animator and director to being the guy who with the ideas that built Disneyland with his brother Roy, who was the financial guy. And it leads you all the way up until the park is open. They're going to build Epcot Center. The plans are ready for Epcot. And what his plans were for Epcot, not what the place turned out to be whatsoever. He wanted to make an actual city where people lived, worked.
Oh, okay.
He wanted to make the community of tomorrow where everybody could go to work on a monorail or an underground clean energy living kind of thing.
And they just turned it into a theme park.
Yeah, they turned it into a theme park. And he was so ahead of the game and ahead of technology with his whole idea of using clean energy and people movers and monorails that I wonder what the world could be like if he was still around.
Well, and that's not an out-of-the-world idea either, because the time that he came from was from, like, streetcars and more public transit.
Yes.
He just wanted to apply that model to modern technology at the time. But, you know, our world went to, everybody gets their own car and screw public transit.
Right, right.
Thanks, L.A.
So the first episode follows him through until his death.
Okay.
And then the second episode is where it picks up from there and, you know, actually building Epcot and let me see what else, where else did they go? They building a few like Paris Disneyland, which looks absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's like the prettiest, they call it the prettiest of the parks. And then like episode 3 is the Michael Eisner years, or maybe that's episode 4, I don't remember. But Michael Eisner and his partner, his business partner, that were the ideas they had were just great for Disneyland, and you can see the passion that he had for Disney. And then, until his partner died, and then everything kind of went to hell for him too. Yeah. And it's just really kind of an emotional roller coaster ride, but it takes you behind the scenes and rides, so you get to see backstage of the Matterhorn. And
I'm going to start watching it. I didn't know what it was, and I didn't even give it a second look when I saw it. But now I'm like, all right, I'll watch that.
There's some episodes where I'm like, I'm starting to well up a little bit watching this. I'm like, why is this old man crying talking about Walt Disney? And I'm like, oh, my God, Disney's dead.
That's what Disney does.
Yeah, I know. They pull on all the heartstrings. But it's a really well-done documentary that takes you behind the scenes and things. There is a basketball court at the top of the Matterhorn.
Really?
Yes, there is. it's just really cool, man.
All right. Was that it for Imagineering?
For Imagineering, yeah.
I've been watching The World According to Jeff Goldblum,
which is a
National Geographic show. And
he's such a weird guy.
He is such quirky, lovable weirdo.
Nice.
Everything that he experiences is through like this veil of wonder and joy and excitement of it's like he's being allowed to experience this thing, and he's so joyful and thankful and whimsical
about
it. That's cool. And weird. He's such a weirdo. And it's wonderful. Like, yeah. the first episode is about shoes. And then the next episode is about ice cream. And then there's an episode about tattoos. And it's just him going to these, you know, and almost every one of them, he goes to a convention for something.
Okay.
So he was at a tattoo convention, a shoe convention. And I got to tell you, there's some shady shit going down at shoe conventions. Because people are, I'm not, watch the episode. People are going in there with literal backpacks of wads of money. Like, handful, 4-inch thick stack of, you know, of cash. And these are, they just look like, you know, street thugs coming in with backpacks full of cash. And they're spending, you know, like $1,600, $4,500. Like, shoes are no joke.
Wow.
You know, and then there's a guy, he's one of the bigger vendors in the shoe episode, and somebody's selling a bunch of stuff, and he's like, okay, yeah, I think we can do that for like $47,000. He's like, we do bank transfer. And the guy that's selling him, he's like, yeah, no, I don't want to do that. And next thing you know, they're like off camera huddling and working out some kind of deal. And I'm like, you shady assholes that aren't like running any of this stuff through your bank or paying taxes or screw you.
Wow.
I mean, granted, that's we just came from a toy show where nobody's claiming taxes on what they sold, but we're talking real small amounts of money by comparison.
You make $100, you're happy.
Right. You know, somebody clears $2,000. That was a great day.
Yeah. Like, $47,000. Oh, yeah,
ridiculous.
Shit.
But, yeah, World According to Jeff Garland is, I mean,
Jeff Garland?
Jeff Goldblum. Jeff Garland's just a cranky old guy yelling at stuff. Why? That's the wrong. I can't do his voice. It'll kill me. Speaking of Jeff Garland, you watching Goldbergs this season?
No.
It's so far off the rails now, it's not really enjoyable anymore.
Really? Okay.
I mean, it's never been 80s historically accurate.
Right.
But now, like, the writing of the show has become really self-aware that it's goofy. So characters are saying things that are regularly sort of breaking the fourth wall or aware of, like, oh my, they'll literally say the words like, oh my god, I'm reacting in such a crazy way to this situation. Like,
the hell?
Don't say what you're doing, just do it. And it's
right.
It's just the way that it's written, and it's just really not great this season.
It sucks.
It's become very, I call it self-aware. The show knows it's funny, so the characters are just commenting on how funny and how weird they are in these situations. And
do you think that them branching out into their spinoff show kind of took some of that writing staff that made the Goldbergs so good with it?
I don't know, because their spinoff show took all of the least likable characters and put them all on a show together.
Right.
So that made me happy.
I've caught a couple of episodes, and it's actually not bad.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't like Lainey.
Right.
She's the main character. Tim Meadows is fine.
Yeah.
But I didn't really care for the coach character. They just took all the characters that were, like,
meh,
supporting cast and gave them their own show, and I'm like, eh.
Yeah, it's not bad, but it's not what the Goldbergs was.
Yeah.
So.
Anything else before we move on from Disney Plus? This is also going to be kind of a short episode because we have a shorter drive today. But
yeah.
Anything else?
I did. We watched, other than, you know, Star Wars movies.
Well, yeah.
I did watch the Lady and the Tramp movie.
It kind of creeps me out with the live action animals, and
it takes you a second to get into it. Okay, I will be forthright with you here. I am not a big Lady and the Tramp fan, but my wife is. It's like it's one of her top Disney movies of all time. We started watching it, and both of us are watching it like, I don't know about this. And then about, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes into it, she is sold. She is into it.
All right.
And
are there,
it's cute. It's cool.
Are their mouths animated, like CG, or is it like voiceover?
No, their mouths are animated, so they are talking, which is a little weird.
Okay.
And that's what took so long to get into. But once they get into it, it's so well done, and the animation, it is so top-notch that you kind of forget, weirdly, in a weird way, that these animals are talking.
All right.
It is set in a different place. It's no longer in, like, France where it was. It's now in, like, the Deep South in the early 1900s, whenever cars are just starting to be a thing.
Okay. So, like, are there cats that are in it that are, like, deeply racist?
I don't know how to answer that, because
I can't remember some of the
original Lady and the Tramp had the We Are Siamese, If You Please
song.
Oh,
that's right.
but they took that song out, and instead the cats are kind of like
white
gangsta thugs. No. They're kind of like gangsta thugs.
Bunch of fluffy white poodles with pointy hats on.
No, there is a scene, though, where Tramp walks, like, runs past these two poodles, and they're very, very immaculately groomed poodles.
Yeah.
And he walks up to one of them and says, "Hey, baby, how you doing?" He goes...
I'm guessing male voice.
It's a male, deep right. male voice, and he's like, "I'm a guy," or something like that. Oh, sorry. But... It's a fun movie. Now, there are some gender reversals in it. Like, there's a dog that was a boy that is now a girl in okay. it. And she's a little Scottish Terrier, which is hilarious. Because she's her owner is one of those owners that puts them in outfits and photographs them on a regular basis.
Okay.
So you see little scenes of her getting photos taken of her. Just crack you up. And it's... It's a very diverse cast, and which is, you know, you can kind of expect now, but okay. it's a really well done movie. So I can see why it wasn't sent to theaters and why they put it here instead.
And is it like Lion King, where it's live action, but it's just a bunch of CG animals?
No. All of the animals are actual animals in it. All of them were rescues.
Oh,
all of them were trained.
That's
and
good.
Then after the filming was done,
they put them down. Right?
Geez, no. No.
We're done with you.
What the hell, man?
I would never. I'm such a dog person now.
All the dogs were adopted by cast and crew.
Oh, okay.
So they all went to great homes, and it's...
They all have Instagram accounts now. And
I wouldn't doubt it.
The age of.
But it was a fun movie. I don't know if it's quite up, you know, your alley, but it's a fun movie.
Okay.
So that's all I've watched on Disney, just about everything.
And that's about it. I mean, yeah, same thing. I'm watching a bunch of the Star Wars stuff. I have in my queue to watch Gargoyles and X-Men cartoons.
Gargoyles, X-Men cartoons, Escape from the Witch Mountain series I've got in there. Because
okay.
I loved those growing up.
And then I'm waiting for the Marvel stuff to start dropping. And I really want to see What If when it comes out.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
That's my most anticipated. I know it's animated and has nothing to do with the Marvel Universe. But I loved those comics of What If.
Yeah, I never read the What If series. I wasn't a big Marvel fan growing up, so I love the premise. I was a DC kid, and DC kind of had their Elseworlds thing, which is kind of the same thing, but
isn't
nowhere
it just like
near
Bizarro Land, or have they just like
it's like
retooled everybody from the get go?
Pretty much, it's like, okay, what would Superman be like if he landed in communist Russia?
Ah,
it's that kind of thing, but. So in that kind of way, it is a What If series. But most of them were like Gotham by Gaslight, where it was just Batman set in, you know,
different time
Jack
period.
The Ripper time period.
I wonder if G.I. Joe, I don't think they have, like, if they've ever done, like, a bizarro alternate reality where, like, G.I. Joe are the bad guys and Cobra are the good guys and kind of reworked the characters to fit that.
I want to say they did in a comic series. I don't quite recall which comic series it was.
If they have, write to us at nwapodcast@yahoo.com.
And I'm sure we'll check that sometime.
I check it.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
Liar.
I do. Like, about once a month I go in and clean out all the spam.
God, what else is...
Tell me about the new G.I. Joe comic book.
So there's a new G.I. Joe comic book.
I've heard they've sort of redone the Joe universe a little bit.
They have, and whenever Larry Hama came back on board and with number 250, whatever it was that he... Or 155 or whatever
right,
it was.
Right, 155, yep.
He had... written a comic where Cobra was kind of the shadowy organization that was almost running the government. And
okay,
the
yeah.
Joes were the outlaws that they were trying to capture, right? And Larry Hama had wrapped that whole arc up in about six issues.
Okay.
Which I thought was unfortunate. I thought it really could have had a longer run. Well, this is kind of the same thing. The Cobra has taken over the government, and not only has Cobra taken over the government, Cobra is the government. It's
okay.
not a shadow organization. Everybody is aware that Cobra has taken over the U.S. government, and the U.S. government has signed over all rights to Cobra.
It sounds a little bit like Renegades cartoon.
Kinda, yeah. But at the same time, Renegades also, it wasn't, Cobra wasn't in the forefront. They were just kind of shadowy.
They were just a corporation,
right?
Doing some stuff. All right, so Cobra is running the government.
Cobra is the government, yeah. And it's like, okay, G.I. Joe is a, like in Renegades, a ragtag group of individuals that are trying to fight Cobra, right?
Okay.
The difference is the only members of G.I. Joe that are military are Scarlet, Duke, and Hawk.
Okay.
Okay? And at least that, as far as my understanding goes. And the rest of them are just civilians that have kind of had enough. So Roadblock is a cook who has come on board to because he's had enough. And he's
gotcha.
Now a member of G.I. Joe. And so it's like that. But they've got Stalker. I think Stalker might also be military. I'm not sure. They haven't delved into his history very much. And it's focusing heavily on this new character named Tiger, who is just like early 20s gay guy that just happened to be get the crap kicked out of him, and Duke and Scarlet saved him, and he's kind of joined the team.
Okay.
And now you've... So that's cool. It's our first real new character that we've had in a very long time.
And since, like, Helix, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
Or so you would think, until you meet Flint, who's not really Flint. He looks like Flint, except he's got a beard and a different code name. And
yeah.
He's from, like, Argentina or something like that. And it's like, okay, interesting choice that you make him look like Flint, but he's not Flint at all.
Okay.
There's several other characters like that, too. But the thing that really shocked the shit out of me in issue number one, about halfway through the issue, Duke and Scarlet, they rescue Tiger from the clutches of Major Blood and his troops.
Yeah.
And Duke is captured, because that's what happens when you're Duke. You get captured.
Right.
And then Major Blood puts a bullet in his head and kills Duke.
All right. So they're taking the movie Channing Tatum approach.
In issue one, halfway through. And I'm like, what the fuck? So I'm like, okay, well, I'm intrigued, because this is something new that we haven't seen, that I'm very intrigued to see where this is going to go.
All right.
And in issue number two, you start to see, like, the ramifications of that, with Scarlet being very, very angry about the whole situation and taking it out on the troops that she's trying to train. These civilians that have never had formal training, and she's beating the living shit out of them because she's pissed because Duke is dead.
Hmm.
And it makes you really not like her very much. And then it's a new kind of G.I. Joe. It's a different take on G.I. Joe, but it doesn't feel like G.I. Joe. It's like how we were saying the Mandalorian feels like it's the Star Wars universe. This is just a bunch of familiar, even familiar looking characters, but it's not the same characters.
Yeah. I don't know. G.I. Joe is always, you know, it's the elite military fighting force.
Right.
And I don't know why it's so hard to just do, you know, short arcs of fighting different terrorist things or doing different missions where they're being dropped in and fighting through something. And
maybe it's because Larry Hama's still doing it that they don't feel the need to go that route.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, I don't know. I'm as a fan, as a lifelong G.I. Joe fan, I'm confused as to what I want. Because Larry Hama's comic, it's been going for so long, it's kind of gotten, I don't want to say it's gotten stale, but because I still enjoy it.
Yeah.
But some of the arcs are getting really long in the tooth, if you know what I mean.
Gotcha.
Like Revenge and Blue Ninjas, and it's just getting a little lengthy. And some of those threads need to wrap up so we can move on to something new.
Yeah.
And this is so totally radically different. I don't know if I like it or not. I'm kind of on the fence. So,
will you give it your 3-issue try? Or are you going to go a little longer?
I'm intrigued enough to probably give it a little bit longer just to see how this first arc turns out.
Okay.
And I'll keep you up to date on what's happening with it. It's just, it's a weird feeling, G.I. Joe.
Okay.
It's almost G.I. Joe in name only.
Yeah, and that's when they IDW tried to launch. It was like G.I. Joe Volume 4, and they it looked like anime almost in the way that it was drawn, and it was very kind of like future tech, and they had new characters in there, and
right.
And that just didn't quite work.
No,
at
not,
all.
That's the one where they put everybody in almost like a superhero
suit. Superhero
costume.
Suits, yeah. Yeah, not great.
No, not great at all.
All right. Well, all right. So, talking about G.I. Joe news, we're almost going to wrap this up. We did do the SoCal G.I. Joe and Toy Show in Lake Elsinore today at Pins and Pockets.
Yes, we did.
And it was okay. Good shows always. The Dave did a great job with all of the exclusives.
Yeah, the Headhunter Soldier was awesome.
There's a going to be, if you're not already on it, it might be too late, but there is a wait list for stuff that didn't sell at the show that will be in the SoCal
Joe Show Toy Convention.
So I don't know. There's a Facebook group for it. We'll put a link to it so you can maybe grab some of those exclusives. But Bill Ratner, the voice of Flint, was at the show.
So cool.
And we got a chance to talk to him very briefly. So we are going to put a pin in this real quick and play that short little interview with Bill Ratner, and then we'll be right back. Hey guys, we're here at the SoCal Joe Show with Bill Ratner, voice of Flint. And just real quick, do you have any like a favorite episode or favorite memory from doing the voice of on the cartoon?
My favorite episode was Lady J and I are standing on top of Joe headquarters. It's a bright sunny day. It's summer. I take off my camos. So does Lady J. She just happened to have a very big tube of sunscreen and asked me to do her shoulders. I asked her to do mine. It was all downhill from there.
I bet it was. You know, Buzz Dixon told us a story about writing for episodes and how once they all went up to the roof and there was one of the writers was up there sunbathing in a bikini and they just like barged in on her. I think maybe they wrote that into the show.
I think so, yes.
So that's where that inspiration came from.
Right, Reality Bites. That's where the phrase comes from. Yeah, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for talking to us on
you guys
the podcast.
Are great. You guys have the coolest T-shirts in the world.
Well, thank you very much.
I want one, a hat, a pencil sharpener.
We'll get you a whole swag bag before you
car.
Go. Oh, yeah, the NWA car? Yeah, we'll get you one of those.
A trip to Honolulu.
Right.
Whatever you can give me.
We'll put you in the raffle.
Now I know.
And
knowing's half the battle.
It is. I've heard that. I got to tell you, dirtier than I expected.
Creepy Bill Ratner is creepy.
No, not creepy. Just like he was straight up like, let's get adult with this right off the bat. I'm like,
yeah, it was
all right.
It was pretty fun,
and he just wanted to keep talking too. And I'm like, unfortunately, we caught him at the end of the show when he was leaving, and I pried him away from his publicist real fast.
Such a cool guy, though.
Really nice. That's whose voice you actually heard at the very beginning of the episode.
Yep.
That introed this podcast this
so
time.
Cool.
So
I'm still kind of on a geek high.
Yeah.
I mean, Flint. Hawk has always been my number one G.I. Joe. Flint has always been my number two G.I. Joe character. Yep. So to actually meet the man, it's weird hearing him or seeing him walk around talking to people, and it's like, holy shit, that's
hearing
Flint.
That Flint voice,
yeah,
right?
The Flint voice is very unmistakable.
So that was him. So with that, we'll just do our plugs as usual. We have merch for
yes,
a change,
we do.
Like legit merch. We had a show exclusive of artwork that was done by Danny Zabel, who is an artist out of Canada. He did the cover artwork for the most recent Word Burglar album,
so
Space
good.
Verse, which, by the way, go get that album. It's amazing, as always. It is, if you're familiar with the G.I. Joe animated movie, at the end of the opening credits, Cobra Commander is riding on top of a trouble bubble, and he's yelling, you know, Cobra retreat.
Right.
So it's that image. It looks like old box art.
It does, and it's so spot on.
Yeah, but it's that image from the animated movie. And we have that as a T-shirt for $25, or we have it as a mouse pad for $10.
Yep.
We also have the pins, enamel pins, by Yojo Depot that we've teamed up with. They are doing all original 16 characters from 1982, Straight Arm. And the design is by Jamie Sullivan, who is a current G.I. Joe cover artist.
Awesome work.
So currently we have four pins. We have Scarlet, Snake Eyes, Zap, and Grunt that you can get so far. And those are $10 each, so message us for those. And we'll hook you up with some enamel pins that are collectibles. And what else? Follow us on?
Yeah, you can follow us on Nerds With Attitude. Well, our website, of course, nerdswithattitudepodcast.com, where you can find links to all of our social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can find us on the Raw Live Unedited Network, rawlivepod.com, where you can find other shows like the Sarlacc Digest. That's my personal favorite.
Mm-hmm.
They're Not Dolls, The Podcasting Dead. They just did a wrap-up of the latest season, or mid-season finale of The Walking Dead and that shit show. So just check us out, rawlivepod.com.
Right, and also don't forget, we've also got Nerd Tunes, which has come back. We revived after our summer hiatus,
right.
So check out our other shows. Give us a like, give us a comment, check out and shoot us a private message on any one of our social media for information on how to buy any of our merch. It's actually, we don't have a store on the website.
No.
But it's real easy to contact us through any of the social media.
I wonder if I could build a store.
Probably. And we'll get back to you right away and send you some great exclusive stuff. Very limited quantity on the shirts. We only made 10.
Yeah.
So we got a couple of each size, and then that's it. They're gone.
Yep.
So that's it, Scott.
Yeah, man.
Good chatting with you.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So you take us out of here.
Okay, this has been Scott.
And I have been the abominable Kevin.
Yeah.
And you guys keep it nerdy.